WKXL, 1450 AM, 103.9 FM in the Concord area, and our brand new signal, 101.9 FM in Manchester. We welcome you to In Touch with Kale and Cormier, and we have a very special guest today. And I'm glad we have a signal now in Manchester.
Yes.
Because I know our guest today is a native of the Queen City.
Yes,
before
yes.
she moved out a while ago. So, Jane, why don't you do the introduction?
Awesome. So we are thrilled to have today a wonderful young lady who was born and raised in Manchester and who I had the absolute pleasure to work with for a number of years as my voice student and budding performer, and her name is Allison Messier. And Allison, it's so nice to see you again.
You too, Jane. Wonderful to be here.
Yes, we met out in the parking lot, and I tell you, we gave her a big hug. It's been such a long time, and she hasn't changed a bit at all. She looks exactly the same. So I find that fun. That's great. So Allison Messier. Now, you live in Rhode Island right now, right?
I do. I live in the town of Little Compton, Rhode Island.
Little Compton,
which is geographically more part of Massachusetts than part of Rhode Island. It's close to Westport, Mass, and Fall River, Mass, more so than the rest of the state.
Okay.
So it's we're our own sort of section of Rhode Island.
Wow, that's cool. That's
yes.
cool. So your family's here in Manchester, and you must be here to visit.
Mm-hmm. I grew up in Manchester, and my family has since moved out to Candia. They finally got out of the city.
They did. Oh, my.
So, out in the country now.
Candia, country.
Huh? Way out in Candia.
Yeah. 10 minutes.
No, but it is different in Candia. It is. After
it
you've
is.
Been in
yeah.
Manchester. Yes.
Yeah. No doubt about
And are
that.
They enjoying it?
They love it. It's beautiful.
Good. You had great parents. I loved your parents.
Oh, yeah. They're awesome.
Now, Allison was actually part of a company called Opera Fest.
Mm-hmm.
Which, when I first came back to the States, you know, after singing away for a while, my husband at that time and I started this little opera company. And we started little, but we ended up doing some pretty big things.
Absolutely.
And Allison, how old were you when you started?
I think I was 11 or 12.
Yeah.
I remember seeing an audition notice in the Union Leader for Jesus Christ Superstar.
That was the first one?
That was the first one.
Oh, my gosh.
Which we performed at the Chester Town Hall.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was 1995 or 6, but it was a while ago.
Yeah.
And I wasn't necessarily interested in performing a rock opera, but what I was excited about is that it was an opera company, because I had, since I was a kid, really held this belief that I was an opera singer, despite having no training. So I knew that when I saw, Opera Fest of New Hampshire, that I had to sign up whatever was happening, I was there.
You were. I remember you being in that show. Isn't that funny? I mean, my God, hundreds of shows later, right?
That was a few years ago.
Just a few.
Now, so when did it hit you in your youth that you were meant to be an opera singer?
I saw Marilyn Horn on Sesame Street, and that was it.
Oh, my goodness.
All as a result of Sesame Street. No?
Yeah. I saw Marilyn Horn on Sesame Street singing C's for Cookie. And
I remember that, too. Oh, my gosh.
That was it. I was like, whatever she's doing, that's it.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that, Allison.
Yeah. And they had a lot of opera and classical music. They had Placido Flamingo.
And,
so all of that was great. And on the Muppets, too, they always brought in special guests. They had singers. They still do.
Yeah.
And so that was really my first exposure to classical music and to opera.
Wow.
And, yeah, I don't know. Through my childhood, I sang in some musical theater shows in Manchester. There was a company that was in one of the mill buildings with a black box theater, and I did some shows there and at the Palace. But I really, even though I was doing musical theater, I knew that I wanted to do opera.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of just a holding place for me until I figured out how to move forward.
Yeah, figured out at 11 years old, she figured out how to move forward.
Yeah.
So you had the opportunity to sing, but not necessarily what you wanted to sing.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Well, that changed, certainly.
It did, yeah. We did a lot of shows.
We did.
In Chester and at the Derry, I don't know, is that called?
Derry
the
Opera House?
Yeah. Yeah, as well.
Yeah.
It's so neat. And how many of these little theaters still exist, and it's fun that we got opportunity to bring music there again.
I know we did.
Be the first opera performer.
Did you go to Europe with us?
I did. We went to Austria. We went to Austria.
Didn't
twice.
You go to England?
Went to England, yes, with a group that we had called the Classical Singers.
That's right. So it's interesting. That model that we started was very unique. We didn't know it, but it was very unique because we had one third of the company dedicated to youth opera, one third for professional opera singers, and then one third for community performers.
Oh.
For those that might want to try out singing in an opera or always wanted to learn about an opera. And the format of Piccola opera right now is similar to that. Certainly one third, probably plus, is devoted to the Piccolo Youth Opera. And my hope is to be able to get them overseas, too. And, of course, last 2 years, forget it, right?
Yeah.
And it looks like we might even be out next year. But what are you going to do?
I mean, will do it, Jane.
I know.
You will get it done.
I will.
Anybody that can get it done, it's you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So that's on the docket for the future.
And that's such a nice way to travel and to see the world. Singing has been such a ticket to the world for me and for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
First time we went to Austria, I think we sang in the Salzburg Festival.
We did.
Famous by the Von Trapps.
Yes. We got to sing and see all that space that they were in. Yeah. Absolutely.
And then another example of such a small world is that when I moved to Little Compton, my first apartment was adjacent to a property that was owned by a Von Trapp. And I guess one of the Von Trapps that came, she's the granddaughter of Maria Von Trapp. Her father was one of the children. So...
Oh my God.
Most of them settled, of course, up in Vermont, Stowe. But yeah, there's some.
But so you live next to her?
Yeah.
Oh my God, that is just bizarre.
Goodness.
Okay.
Talk about coincidences.
It's such a coincidence when I landed there. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
Allison's full of them.
She is.
That's how you know you're on the right path.
Yeah.
You get that little, yep, okay.
Yeah. So tell us, what was your journey like for the opera? The good thing about opera in the world of the past 15 years has really changed, even 20 years, has changed from when I was a kid. All right. Now, because the world opened up so much with technology, singers really aren't at the beck and call anymore of just the opera company and the manager.
Right.
Because now you can do your own thing. And I have to say, that was probably years ago. The thing that I found so impressive about you is that you were able to define what you wanted to do in your career, and you just went out and did it.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that perspective.
Absolutely. It's true, isn't it?
Sort of, yeah.
I think so.
I was in it at a really transitional time, I think, in the field, not only with the technology, but with the way the companies operate.
Mm-hmm.
I got a little bit, I don't like to try to victimize myself in any way, but once I graduated college, I went to New England Conservatory. When I graduated there, it was really the height of all of the opera companies trying to make a lot of money off of young singers and charging exorbitant audition fees to even consider looking at the piece of paper you sent them, never mind listening to the CD that you made for them.
Yeah.
So that doesn't happen anymore. Luckily, a lot of people complained, and it's not like that anymore.
Yeah. It's a little better.
It's a lot better. The fees have calmed down, and... Mm-hmm. The technology is much easier. You can make a recording and video on your phone.
Right.
And everybody has a phone. And then it was you had to go to a studio and pay someone to record you, or you had to get what were those things called? Like a DAT player or those mini DVD
recording
things.
Yep.
And it was, you had to really be fluent in the technology.
Right.
Or pay someone who was. And that wasn't necessarily accessible to anyone. And school, despite all the wonderful training, of course, that one gets in the course of becoming a singer, you don't get training in how to do recording and video editing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the software was not as easy before. Now it's easy. You can literally do everything on your phone.
Sure.
And so singers now have the world open to them in that way. But I carved my own way despite that.
That's right.
I would have done something different had I been starting now. But, I had wonderful training throughout by meeting Jane and having all of the great experiences that we had performing I went into college already in a really strong place.
Right.
Having had a lot of performing experience and experience working with great diction coaches from New York. And so already being a little bit ahead of the game. And throughout college, too, I really enjoyed continuing to perform outside of school, which is not something that everyone else did. Some people just did what was being offered at school,
right,
which was a lot, but maintaining the contacts outside of that place and continuing to perform in different concerts,
right,
whether they be like oratorio type concerts, which I've done a lot of that work. I think it's really rewarding. I love doing that.
I think that that work is so underrated by the classical singer of today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They, in the old days, in my day, and past me even, oratorio singing was part of the staple of the performer. If you were an opera singer, you were not considered a well-rounded artist if oratorio was not part of what you did, just like art song, just like opera, you know, was part of the whole package. It kind of weeded itself out to be like an add-on for a lot of singers, you know, as time went by.
Well, and that's before you go any further,
yeah,
for those of us who don't know what that is, I mean, which I'm sure is most of our audience, including myself.
The best, most recognizable example is Handel's Messiah. And that's bread and butter for so many singers. Every December, you can kind of count on having 2, 3, 4, as many weekends as you can max out with different Messiah performances.
Right.
And so that's an example of oratorio. It's not staged like an opera. Usually the storyline in an opera is not sacred, but all the oratorio repertoire is sacred repertoire. And it's performed really widely by a lot of choral groups.
Mm-hmm.
Most choral societies will do, you know, maybe a mass setting or a piece by Handel or Bach.
Right.
And that's what we consider to be the oratorio repertoire. And you don't have staging or anything. You just parade out there in a fancy dress and sit in a chair. And then the chorus sings a lot. And then the soloist gets up every once in a while and sings something and sits back down.
Yeah.
So,
but it's an artful, concert experience, you know, to the folks that are.
Oh, sure.
And especially if you have faith, you know, if you're a faith person and you hear these oratorios, they're magnificent music.
Yeah.
Don't forget, these composers were not composing for us. The composers from great oratorio were composing because God sent them here to do it. And they had to write those materials for the oratorio in a higher mindset, I think, than even some of their regular, you know, operatic stage work.
Yeah.
They're beautiful.
See, already this has been a learning experience for me.
There you go.
As it usually is.
Well, you probably knew what oratorio was. You didn't know the name of it. You know, what it was called.
Right. Oh, yeah. Now that you explain it. Yeah.
There you go.
And no, that's great.
Here's something I used to always say, and I haven't done it yet. I've said it for 25 years. I don't know why don't we stage oratorio? Like, what is that, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could really stage, chorus and all, Messiah.
That would be amazing.
Right?
Yeah,
wouldn't you?
That would be very powerful.
It would be awesome.
Yeah.
And I've always said that before I go, I want to make sure I'm going to stage a Messiah with orchestra.
Wow.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Yes.
Yeah, you could do it. Absolutely.
That would be awesome. Yeah, I've seen a couple of them with Bach cantatas. Sometimes people will stage the Bach cantatas, which are a little easier. There are less people involved.
Right,
To really do a full staging, that would be fun.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I agree.
Jane will accomplish.
Yes.
Accomplish that. And you'll be a part of it.
There we go. We'll have to put that on a list somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what have you done for oratorio?
Oh, so many performances of Messiah, of course, but, you know, Mozart Requiem and a lot of kind of lesser-known Baroque works by people like Zelenka, who was a Czech Baroque composer.
Mm.
And that's become kind of popular in recent years. I think there were some new publications, people dug up the scores and made new editions.
Yes.
So then choruses say, ooh, this is what's available, and they do it. So that's fun.
Yeah.
And Bach as well, like the Bach Magnificat and the Bach B minor Mass.
Yes.
And so
bread
many
and butter.
Yeah, all of some solo oratorios for alto, which are so fun. It's so great also to perform with orchestra. That's another thing where it's, when you're working with opera companies, it's so expensive to put on an opera that it's not always a reality to have the funding to hire an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But in oratorio performances, it's more common that the choral group will be able to pull together the funding to have a full orchestra or as much of it
as needed
to sound, as much as possible. So
yeah,
that's really fun too, aspect of it. And not being away from home as long is a minor perk as well.
That's a major perk.
It's a major perk. Yeah, because when you're on an oratorio performance, maybe you're gone for 4 or 5 days.
Right.
But in opera, it could be weeks or months.
Yeah, that it was. And it's not fun either when you come, if you have kids. To me, that was the deciding force for me, because even if I went away, let's say I had a gig for 4 months,
mm-hmm.
I used to have to keep planning to come back to see my kids, right? And then the whole time you're away, you're thinking about what you're missing, you know, or what if they get sick,
sure.
You know. Or,
yeah.
And I don't know how they do it, frankly. I used to say I didn't have kids for someone else to bring them up, you know, and because I used to have agents that just get a nanny. I'm like, you know what? I just wasn't comfortable, and that's how we ended up back in New Hampshire and started opera companies, because I said, well, I'm not giving up the opera.
So make your own.
Let's do something else. Yes.
Yeah.
So that's it. So yeah. So what else do you do as an opera singer? Because you
as
live your
opera
life.
Singer, I do. I sing a lot in churches. I'm very fortunate in the area I live that I've built a network through mostly the Catholic churches, but some other Protestant denominations as well, that keep me very busy. Every weekend I sing 3 or 4 masses.
Wow, Sally.
Yeah, and then during the week at least 2, sometimes 4 funerals on weekday mornings.
Wow.
And just came through a very busy wedding season, which was essentially a double wedding season.
Yeah.
This year.
That's right.
I sing for churches around within the Diocese of Fall River, which spreads, you know, over the river toward Providence and then all the way to Cape Cod. So,
oh my gosh.
Recently, I've been driving to Falmouth on the Cape, which is about an hour from my home, and they keep me very busy out there. So I'm really
That's
lucky
cool.
to have so much church work.
Yeah.
And, you know, some singers also poo-poo the church work.
They're yes, not, they do. They're crazy.
You know, but, you know, it's something that's really special about singing for people in that context. It's very different than a concert-going audience.
Mm-hmm.
People who go to church, they may not be expecting there to be a really skilled singer there. So
yeah.
When they show up, you're like, oh, I got to go to this funeral. You go there, and then there's something that's potentially really, that feels simple for me. I just offer the songs. I sing, you know, Schubert Ave Maria like every day. But and people are so moved by it, and it's so meaningful
yep.
to them.
Absolutely.
And so I love doing that work. Being able to just do what I'm trained to do and what feels easy for me, and to really share in that way that offers healing to people.
Yeah.
Like, what's better than that?
I know, and you get paid to do it.
That's
a gift.
It doesn't even feel, yeah.
And I hope the music you perform at weddings and funerals is different.
Oh, yeah. Well, sometimes it's the same, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ave Maria. So the Ave Maria would be typically,
okay.
You could sing that at both, right?
Yeah, go both ways. Yeah.
And so that's what's actually hard about it sometimes, too, is the songs are not all of them are the most, are by Schubert.
Yes,
you know?
That's right.
There's some of that repertoire.
It can be
really
a little bit
difficult
to
continue liking it. Or to ever have liked it. But I try to really hold the belief, okay, other people think this is really meaningful. So to keep reinventing the wheel and to keep trying to offer it in a way that no sarcasm shows through about my opinion of the song.
Right.
So
that's true with anything we do, though.
So that's a little bit of the hard piece. But other than that, I really love doing it. And, you know, and just the nice aspect of working in the church, too, is being so close to that calendar year. Of there being the cycle of what we do at each time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really grounding and beautiful to do that and to go through that process with communities of people. You know, there are a few different churches I work for now, so it's not always the same people I see every weekend, but, you know,
you
to see
do,
two groups of people and to get to know them a bit is really nice.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, you know, the singer for today, if they're expecting to go out there and have an opera career who's going to pay the bills, they would be pretty much mistaken. Because if you want to sing today, you've got to be able to do a lot of different things. And I used to always say to folks, for instance, you know, like you mentioned, Allison, that sometimes people think that the church work is less fulfilling, let's say, than the stage work. And my response was always, well, you could be sitting behind a desk.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
Are you singing? Right?
Yeah.
People that would turn down a church gig because it's a church gig, and they do.
Yeah.
Because it's not performing. They have totally missed the point. And for the folks that lived their life through a couple of fibrous membranes in their throat, not easy. It's the difference between boys and men. It's a big difference. So that's what I'm impressed with you. You've from the time out, that's been your mission. That's been what you've had for a livelihood. And not many people can say that.
Yeah, that's true. And I also have really enjoyed making my own performance opportunities sometimes was modeled so well by you. It's like, well, you don't have somebody else to hire you, do it yourself.
That's right.
And then you get to pick what you sing,
That's right.
Another great aspect. So I've been lucky to, you know, find different people to collaborate with and make recitals here and there, featuring art song. I love singing art song.
Yep.
And for our listeners, we should probably explain that art song is music that's within what may sound to the listener like an opera genre, like it's the same style of singing, but it's not written to be performed on the stage in any way. It's written for people's homes or for small recital halls. It's written to be a different kind of a listening experience. It's
right.
a bit more intimate. It's a bit more about the poetry, and there's more subtleties in what's happening between the pianist and the singer.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little more of a dialogue, and so I love singing that repertoire. And so I like to make my own concerts sometimes at various, you know, churches or the library concert series here and there.
That's right.
Yeah. And
that's
even
awesome.
That nice, a lot of times different retirement homes and senior living communities will really welcome that type of offering.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been really rewarding too, to offer, put together a program and then kind of tour it around a bit. And and sometimes sort of branching out into different repertoire. There was a couple of years where I was working with a harpsichordist, and we decided we wanted to do a bunch of folk rock from the 60s and 70s. And so
I would have liked to have heard that one.
Oh, I have a CD.
We can
play it. We did like Joni Mitchell and Cat Stevens and that sort of. And that sort of repertoire, which was really fun. It was interesting how close it was to what we would normally do if I were collaborating with a harpsichordist, which would be Elizabethan lute songs.
Yeah, right.
So
kind of different, just a little.
It's kind of different, but it was kind of really similar, which is what ended up being funny. We're like, oh, this is just the modern updated version of that, and they're very the same.
Interesting.
Maybe less attention to detail of like poetry, but
wow,
that's fun too.
Yeah,
well, I'm gonna jump in because we have to take a break here on AM 1450 WKXL 103.9 FM in the Concord area, our new signal 101.9 FM in Manchester, where Allison has a lot of fans, I'm sure. And it's In Touch with Kaylin Cormier, and our guest is Allison Messier. And Allison, I can't wait to hear her actually sing. I don't think I'm going to ask her to do it here, but looking forward to that. And this is In Touch with Kaylin Cormier right here on WKXL. Welcome back. AM 1450, WKXL, 103.9 FM Concord, 101.9 in Manchester. In Touch with Kaylin Cormier. And our guest is Allison Messier, Manchester, New Hampshire native. And where'd you go to high school?
I went to the Derryfield School in Manchester.
Did you have opportunities there to perform?
Yeah, they had a wonderful theater program and a nice chorus as well. I was really lucky during my time there that the choral director was married to the woman who was the director of the Manchester Choral Society. So I had this great opportunity to work with both groups as well. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun. I got a lot of wonderful experiences performing on the stage at Dairy Field and then with the Choral Society as well.
That's great.
So that worked out well.
Yeah, you think?
Really, yeah.
Worked out very well. Just to go off topic, I have a question. So, you know, for singers, these past 2 years have been probably nothing short of purgatory because I've always said you're not a singer unless you're singing. And, of course, we've had enforced, you know,
sure.
You couldn't sing. Where are you going to sing, right? And how do you keep your training going? How did you find that time as a performer?
Yeah, it was hard. The very first few weeks were unbelievable. To watch all of my colleagues lose all of their work for the foreseeable future was really jarring.
Yeah.
You know, people were within the first, I would say those 2 weeks of March of 2020, every working singer I knew lost their contracts for like 2 years. So to be part of that community and just have such an unknown, what is going to happen? Nobody had any kind of a fallback situation. I mean, I was the lucky one. I cannot believe I didn't. I mean, in a way, yes, I would have loved to have been contracted to sing all kinds of wonderful performances that I would have lost during that time, you know? But I didn't have those contracts. So the work that I had didn't get canceled. Yes, churches were closed for, I think it was like a month or a month and a half, but the Catholic churches were the first to open.
Mm-hmm.
And although singing was strangely like prohibited with zero science to back up the fact that they were going to say that singing is dangerous.
Right. Well, they're still saying
they're still saying, right. Yes. Okay. Singing is dangerous. I guess you could say that singing is dangerous.
Well, you do know what they're saying, why they say it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because the particles, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Supposedly go the flowing aerosols. Faster, yes. And, you know, you can make everyone sick.
Right.
Hmm.
I have a brass player friend who wanted to show the parents in her school, she teaches fourth grade band, that playing a wind, you know, like a brass instrument, you're not spraying particles all over the room. So she wanted to demonstrate this. So she lit a candle and then she had her kids playing like trumpets, French horns, just right at the candle, trying to blow it out. And the video is hilarious. She's like, blow harder. It's like, brrr. You know? And the candle didn't even move. There wasn't even a flicker
air
to the flame.
There
so it's not as the vibration that's coming out.
Yes.
So that was funny. So yeah, I was lucky that, you know, as soon as churches were opening, that I was welcomed back.
Yeah.
And they set me up in like a plexiglass booth.
Right.
And I was able to sing. And they took all the hymnals out of the pews.
Right.
Which
we
all know that Catholics don't really pick up the hymnals and sing anyway. I mean, I know that that's not true absolutely everywhere, but in a lot of places they weren't singing anyway. So this just kind of push the envelope, and of course, if you tell people not to do something, they're going to do it.
Right.
So some people were still singing despite that, and then we found out which hymns are the ones they really know in their memory.
Yeah.
What are the things that they'll sing? And it was awesome during that time to have the privilege of being like one of the only singers
in that church
in the world.
But
to be
wasn't
singing.
The church closed for a while and online? Because I thought all the Catholic churches shut down.
Yeah, but they were only until like May or something.
Really?
End of May. Yeah, they reopened. We were closed
that May? Because I know in New Hampshire that's not true. We were closed in New Hampshire well beyond May.
No, most of the other churches were still closed, are still online even
yeah,
now.
Some are.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
So, yeah, I got really lucky that when that was, Catholic churches reopened in about like the end of May, Memorial Day weekend, I think, of 2020.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I lost work during that time, and then it was really nice to be back and to be singing, and then it was a little more okay. Like, there's always a strange oddity of, like, you're not supposed to be a soloist. You're leading the congregation
in
prayer. Okay, well, if nobody else is singing.
What are you supposed to be, right?
You're the soloist
yes.
at that point, if no one's singing.
Yeah, no, you know what? I totally agree with what you're saying. This whole thing for me watching this as a singer was bizarre, as a teacher as well, because churches, at least in New Hampshire, were closed a long time. I mean, I would say only like about 7 months are we open. It was like a year
yeah.
here. And during that time, I was able, just because I was, you know, Piccolo Opera's director, to keep things going. I didn't drop any students. I taught in a big space. I had a shield in front of me. I was at least 10 feet away from the singer. Plus, I had a shield on my mouth. Mm-hmm. The singer was allowed to use the shield if they wanted or not. And didn't miss any lessons. And my students didn't miss any lessons.
That's
students
great.
Came to lessons, right?
Yeah.
We performed right through COVID. We did it with social distancing. The first summer, we did outside performances all summer long. Mm. And last year, we did both in and out. Last year, we were at Franklin Pierce University for 2 weeks.
Nice.
So we were really clever about it. But I thought to myself, no, we're not canceling. I don't care. Well, you know, obviously, if we were in the throes of it,
right.
that would be different. But that wasn't really where we were. And there were ways to mitigate, you know,
absolutely. If
things.
People can go out and go to the grocery store and go here and there, you know.
But don't go to church.
Don't go to church. Don't go to the gym.
Yeah. Rhode Island, isn't that the state that had... No, I guess that was New Jersey.
Yes,
was that the state with the poor guys? They're still being assailed, you know, because they didn't
right.
want to shut down their gym.
Right, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure other places as well. But, Allison, when you're contacted to do a funeral or a wedding,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the people have a suggestion as to what they want you to sing, do you ever try to talk them out of it?
I'm not usually the one responsible. Usually it's the organist who is the contact person. But
okay.
for funerals, you don't even get, you just get an email, or the lady in the office is the one that takes the
list request.
From the funeral home. Yeah. So there's nothing I can do about it. Even though I think people would choose different songs if they knew that they were available. I'm not sure that people in their grief are really choosing the same 3 or 4 songs for every funeral because they love those songs.
Right. That's what they're
told.
That's
what they're told to pick from, or that's what they had. You know, it's a tradition.
Mm.
Not a very long, long tradition, but maybe they had that at the, you know, former family funeral, and it's been, people just pick the same 4 songs. So, but yeah, it would be really nice if they left it to the musicians to offer something that could be.
You also have to get music okayed by the Catholic Church. You can't perform most secular popular songs.
Oh, right, yeah.
At church.
That's true.
Roman
Catholic. Weddings work the same way?
Weddings are a bit more complicated because, of course, people want their weddings to be perfect. And that music at the ceremony is not excluded from this type of scrutiny. So I'm very happy to not have to be the contact person for that. It's
yes.
very hard. The times that I have done it.
Yes. It's very emotional,
it's
isn't
very,
it?
It's very, there are a lot of emails. There are a lot of calls about the same very simple questions that have gone over it many times.
Yeah.
So I don't know. If you're out there and you're planning a wedding, just trust the people who are the professionals that do it all the time. Don't think that you need to figure out how to do their job for them.
Yeah.
There you go. Have trust in the pros.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's In Touch with Kaylin Cormier. Allison Messier is our guest. And we're talking opera today, among other things.
Yeah.
But primarily opera, which is always a good topic, especially with Jane here.
Yeah, well.
At 1450 AM, WKXL, 1039 FM in Concord, 1019 FM in Manchester. It is In Touch with Kaylin Cormier. Welcome back, AM 1450 WKXL, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. That's a new signal that we have, and it's a great one, too.
Yeah?
Yeah, check it out.
Good for you.
Yeah, it moves into Manchester now. WKXL never did that.
That's right. It's brand new.
But you can always catch us online at nhtalkradio.com. You can listen wherever you are in the free world to nhtalkradio.com. So there you go. Allison Messier is our guest, a Manchester native. So what is on your docket for the upcoming future?
For the upcoming future?
Yes, in terms of your professional career?
Well, in the foreseeable future, we're headed into the Christmas season, so yeah. I wish that this year were a bit more busy like it has been in years past, but it hasn't really come back yet. Mm. So I'm just headed in with, you know, a pretty full schedule of running here to there to sing in different places, in churches mostly, and carrying my students as well. Right now,
so I teach now.
I do teach.
Oh my! She used to tell me she never wanted to teach.
It's terrifying. Every week I'm terrified.
Why?
It's difficult.
Why is it difficult? For you, you know what you need to teach.
I know, but.
So what's difficult?
Students are difficult.
The people are difficult.
People
you're right.
Are difficult. Yeah. So. yeah.
So why do you say that? This is
okay. I teach. Right now, I have 5 students at a college in New London, Connecticut, Mitchell College. 4 out of 5 of them are autistic.
Oh my gosh!
And so it is a really big challenge.
Yes, it is.
And I think too. I had more last year. Some of them graduated. Some of them fell off. I'm really glad to be down to 5 there. Last year, I taught almost 10, just to fill them in a day. It was too much. So I'm glad to be down to 5 there on campus. But students are very stressed now.
Right.
Like, it's really scary how much these college-age students are really worn down. The past couple of years has been especially rough on them, but it wasn't looking so great before that either. So in their voice lesson, these are not music majors. These are students who are doing it because they like to sing. And so just helping them to even find any sort of like peace inside themselves, in their body, to help them find their voice, to help them notice that they're breathing in and breathing out. it's a lot. I think for me as like a very empathic person too, I have to try to just find that distinction between like, okay, what is it that I'm carrying into this space and what is theirs? And it's taken me some time to realize, like, okay, that's not mine. That's them.
Right.
And to try to really help them to come back down and help them with all. There's so many things when you learn to sing. Not only is it using your voice, but it's all of the musicality of it. You know, reading the music and getting the notes and rhythms correct and matching the pitch. There are so many small things and presenting oneself on stage and I don't know if it's gotten worse, but the posture of college students is horrible.
It has.
They all are so hunched over.
Right.
They grew up
backpacks.
Backpacks, computers, phones. So getting them to just be upright and not.
It's a struggle.
It's a real struggle.
Yeah, it is.
So
I talk with my little kids, you know, my like middle schoolers, right, at Founders. I find that if I can get them to be careful about the fact that they don't recognize that they're walking around hunched. When you're that young, all right, and you've already got curved shoulders, you don't have a long way to go as you age.
Exactly.
You're in a bad position. And so I'm telling them that all the time. They're like rolling their eyes. Oh, just come here. You know, we have a laugh about it.
You have back problems by the time.
Absolutely. I tell them, you know what, that's one benefit of having gray hair, right? Because I'm not kidding. I've actually thought about this. This is a weird topic, right, we're talking about this, but it's important for that young set. So many people are like, oh, you got to color your hair. And then I go, why? And then I started thinking about it. I realized that I have more input with those younger students, middle school and high school, with the gray hair than I ever did with my dyed brown hair, right?
That's interesting.
I know. I used
bald
to
bald might work too. You know,
I probably would, but I'll tell you
I don't mean on you.
No, I got it. I think that when they see someone that's older than them, and then that person offers them the information, like, guys, when you're my age, do you want to stand straight? Do you want to be tall and straight? Right? And for a second, you see them go, you know, you catch them. And then you explain to them, doing this with your phone all day is not good for these shoulders.
No.
Pull them back. You have to get them at that age.
You need to teach them that posture because you can't be all messed up with your posture. It's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Everything connects, each muscle and each little ligament and each little part.
All connects.
So you can't do anything until you address, like, okay, you are not standing straight. It may feel like you're standing straight, but I am seeing you completely hunched over.
Yes. So stand up.
That's
so you find difficult so that's part of stressful. Teaching.
It's, yeah.
So that might be because you're empathic.
Oh, yeah. But right? Also, it's a heavy lift because students now, I'm not sure, obviously not all students, but many students, they don't really do the work themselves.
No.
They don't take it on like, okay, I'm going to work hard because I want to learn to sing.
Right.
It's like somehow it's on me to make that happen for them. They just stand there and look at me like, okay. And, you know, getting them to like, practice.
Yeah.
So we had to really work hard to schedule practice times this year. That was my big push this semester. Uh-huh. I'm like, okay, you're going to sign in to when you come to practice.
Good.
And so once a week, get them to practice. Well, what do I practice? It was so weird. Nobody was there telling me what to do.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. You're going to have to figure it out for yourself. So there's not, that's not really a skill that's taught. It doesn't. Yeah. It seems like students are not really encouraged to do like critical thinking or...
All the time, yep.
So it's making them harder and harder to teach. And also they think that if they can't do it the first time, then they can't do it.
Right. They give up too quick.
So I'm like, okay, you're going to try a number of times, and I don't expect you to get it right any of those, like, 10 times. But they think, oh, this, you know, I'm so stupid, I'm so bad, I can't do it, I'm awful at this. Like, what? When did that start happening?
Yeah. No, it's true. It has gotten worse.
And so it's really hard. That's why I think teaching is hard.
There you go. Well, I can understand what you're saying for sure.
Our guest today is Allison Messier, Manchester native. And you're listening to In Touch with Kaylin Cormier on AM 1450 WKXL, 103.9 FM in Concord, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Welcome back to our final segment, albeit a brief one, on In Touch with Kaylin Cormier. Allison Messier is our guest on AM 1450, WKXL, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM now in Manchester. And Allison, you know, with COVID the last year and a half plus, what have you as a performer missed the most?
What have I missed the most? Really performing with larger groups of people. It's really... It's too bad. And audiences gathering without fear. It's so hard to see so many people carrying around so much fear. I'm sorry that that's happened.
Mm.
It's, you know, gathering together to hear a concert or to go to church or any of that shouldn't be something that we need to be worried about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm sorry for that. And yeah. Although I will say, though, it has been really important for a lot of us to be pushed into the 21st century, myself included. I never probably would have learned how to edit videos or had learned how to upload the video to YouTube or any of those things. I wouldn't have done it.
Right.
It was on my list for years of, oh, I need to do that. And this made me do it.
Well, there's that. There you go.
There's that. Yeah.
So when things are completely back opened up, and I think they will be in the not too distant future, we hope anyway, what are you looking forward to doing?
I'm looking forward to going back on my little tour of singing with all the oratorio groups that I love. I love going, you know, in years past, I sang a lot for the Clear Lakes Chorale up near Winnipesaukee and got to know those people really well, and it was so nice every Christmas to go sing with them and spend a few days in Wolfboro. And I do the same. I have groups in Old Lyme, Connecticut, where it's the same kind of connection.
That's cool.
And all over in Western Connecticut as well. And so I miss that. I can't wait to go back and doing that and to get into more performances and go forward.
There you go.
Well, it's great to have you here today. Thanks for coming up from Rhode Island to be with us today. We appreciate that. And great insight. And we We love that. On In Touch.
Yes.
With Kaylin Cormier right here on AM 1450 WKXL, 103.9 FM and 101.9 FM in Manchester. Join us next time for In Touch with Kaylin Cormier.